Hello and welcome to the Research VR podcast. This week, I'm just imitating Peter and Chris because we've kind of been doing our independent episodes. And so the host keeps changing. So today I'm actually joined by another German friend. His name is Daniel Sproul. Are you German or just from Germany? Okay, you are German. That's good.
Totally, yeah.
Daniel Sproul from currently Realities, the company that's actually making photogrammetry, an incredibly immersive and accessible technology in virtual reality by kind of activating like VR tourism to be even a thing. So joined here by Daniel. Hi, how are you doing, Daniel?
Too bad, not too bad.
Yes.
It's been great stopping by here in the valley for a few days. Always great to be around.
Nice. Yeah, we're glad to have you at Upload. I mean, we met a long time ago at an SVVR far, far away. Well, not too far. But
it feels like ages.
It feels like ages. And we were like, we're both geeking out that we both study cognitive science, so we're very much into UX. And you definitely have like a repertoire and a long resume already in VR of like the different places you've been at. When was the first time you like got into virtual reality? What drew you into it? And how long has it been since you've been building things in VR?
So I've been actually working in VR since about 5 years. I got into contact with VR.
5 years, wow.
Yeah, that was okay. before Oculus and all that kind of, before like what I call, like to call the VR renaissance.
Uh-huh.
I was working as a researcher, actually, during my semester abroad in Canada. I was working at the iSpace lab of Bernhard Ricke.
Cool.
At Simon Fraser University. So there, the goal of the lab was to not only do VR research around VR, but mainly do psychology research using VR as a tool.
VR, yes.
So, I mean, that's a theme that has been going on for quite a long time. Like, VR has never been dead in, like, the research community.
Right.
But, yeah, like, the tools were very different. We had those old Envis headsets where one cost, like, $10,000, and they weigh, like, I don't know how many kilograms, and like a lot of the time when you put it on people's heads, like after 5 minutes, they're like, oh, my head is tired.
Jeez.
So yeah, I was running a study about, or like was mainly doing stuff around navigation and spatial orientation in humans.
Awesome.
So human experiments. All consented by the ethics board, of course.
Good. The IRB has signed off on all.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was fun stuff. So very specific. You know, trying to find out like what kind of cues the brain uses for navigation, for staying oriented, and like looking at edge cases where that breaks down, just to learn more.
Interesting. So you're looking at almost like mental maps and like place cells, grid cells.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess how spatial, something, having spatial memory, it was something we've never really had in technology or any kind of software before. How do you think is now that's being incorporated into just, you know, overall user experience side of things?
Yeah. I think that is actually one of the biggest advantages that VR might be able to offer us coming up to, because our memory is based very much evolutionary on location-based memory, like grid cells and place cells, as you just mentioned. So there's a lot, like a very tight integration of that, even in our brain, like the locations that are for like location memory and memory in general are very close by.
Right.
So there's been assumed that there's a strong link between the both, that a more abstract kind of memory developed out of this place memory, which also makes sense, like from an evolutionary point of view. Like it was really important for us to know where things are, where something happened. And I think we can utilize that going into VR, you know, placing things spatially and using that for recall. We're really bad at those abstract structures to recall, like in the fifth subfolder of like drive D, I put this one thing. And
right.
One nice example of that is actually when you read a book, like a physical book, not a Kindle.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people, when you ask them about a certain part of the book, like a certain line, they would be able to tell you if it was like left upper side or right lower side. That shows you like this abstract thing, this part of the story is tightly coupled to this location where you picked it up, even if it's just on the book. And yeah, playing around with the HoloLens also the last days, I think there's something really, really interesting where you can actually put applications around your home and find that stuff again.
So yeah, I think that's a vision that I've had with augmented reality as well, where the post-it notes that we write, or let's say that we'll virtually write, like you'll have those always, let's say, to the left side of your body underneath the bottom head of the hemisphere. And so they're always accessible post-its that you'll have.
Putting that into muscle memory. I think in general, both AR and VR have this huge possibility of making computing more human again, and less abstract. Tapping more into all those innate capabilities that we have, all those instinctive things that just come easy to us. I mean, we can all learn to do math, but it's something that feels very hard. It's very abstract.
Yeah,
and like other things like walking feel very natural. Just because we're designed to do those things, and they are deep down rooted in like the,
exactly.
the older structures of our brain.
And so space, I guess, is like very important for you guys. How do you approach space for realities? Like, what does that mean to you? And are you concentrating on literally building a spatial memory for the person while they're in there so that they can feel, so when they go to the actual place in the real world, the place you've done scans of, they can feel literally that they know their way around?
Well, yeah, it's something that we definitely observe. It's been super interesting. We've been demoing at SVVR some time ago, and there's this girl coming up, and she put on the headset and she went to the castle, and she's like, suddenly, wow, I know this place.
Wow.
Like, I've been here. So she was an American, and she went to Germany as like a tourist and happened to go to that place.
That's
and like she
funny.
Immediately recognized it. And that was super stunning for us. Another funny example of one of the places that we scanned is like the cave in France that we have in there, which David scanned for some archaeologists that were actually excavating there. And then he scanned that and went there half a year later to stop by because he was on his way. So he dropped by and showed them the cave, and those guys were mind blown because they've been working in that cave for like, years. Like, they've been excavating that. They know every little corner.
Yeah.
And when they were walking around the cave, they would automatically not step on certain parts.
Wow.
Because that's what they're used to,
yeah.
because that's the part where the bones are and the artifacts are. So they only would step on certain parts in the real cave. And that immediately happened in the virtual cave as well.
That's fascinating.
So that is it's a very strong way of activating those instincts and like just learn things that you don't actively think about anymore.
And because it's such a subconscious processing that you're doing, which is place, I think that's probably one of the most primitive forms of like memory and learning, and it's the slam of the human brain, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
To figure out where itself is. I think it's always interesting when you end up somewhere and you're like, I know I've been here before, but you don't know why or when, or you don't know how you're so familiar with this location, and that's all those subconscious essentially place. Triggers that the holistic sense to place being like fired, and your body knows that it's been there before, but you don't really recall them on specific memory. I think that's like a fascinating subject of human memory, and we're starting to like work with it, I think, in VR and AR.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, like triggering all those things, like all those inputs, and I think having this spatial feeling, not only the visual basic input,
right.
but just the speciality of a location can trigger a lot of that.
Do you think teleportation breaks mental mapping in your head?
Yes and no.
Yes
and
no. Okay.
That is actually something we've been working a lot with. When we were initially prototyping things. I think it's a huge problem in VR, that there is no good locomotion mode. Like, you always have to have that. There's like those different, I think there's three different sectors that you can be in.
Okay.
It's one, which is, it's comfortable. So, like that for most people, it's impossible to just walk around continuously, like with a gamepad or so. That makes them sick. So you want to stay away from that. Then you have that other axis, which is like immersion and spatial orientation. So you, coming from the sickness point of view, you switch to teleporting, but that kind of kills immersion, and especially like also spatial orientation, like And
then there's the direction when you teleport.
And then there's the third thing, which is the kind of practicality. Like, you know, not everybody's going to have like a omni treadmill or can do redirected walking.
Right.
So you can do those things and you can solve those problems by doing that, which is what the Void is doing. Like, you know, they just have a huge space and let you walk in like slight circles solve that problem. But that's not practical for a lot of people. So you have to find like on those three axes, you have to find a trade-off. And I really did not like the teleportation mechanics
that
came up. They come like, I mean, that's where we started from as well. So because especially for us, experiencing the place and the size of the place and staying oriented is something that is very, very crucial to the entire experience of experiencing the place and traversing it. So every time you teleport, I had the feeling like you kind of start from scratch with your mental mapping. Like it takes a second, you're jarred. You're like, well, where am I? Especially novice users, which is, you know, a big part of our target group that are not willing to like, you know, spend hours and hours learning something, but just want to like jump in. So that's why we ended up with the ludicrous speed option or zooming, it's been called.
Do you currently have them on the latest scans, or is that something you implemented in the beginning?
No,
you do.
It's,
okay,
it's in there. You can actually, if you reach behind your head and pull the trigger, you can pull out a little menu.
No way!
Gives you free locomotion options.
Oh, cool. Okay, awesome.
So it's a bit hidden at the moment. Like that's all gonna come more to the forefront. So,
and for people that didn't understand in the beginning, what experience or app are we talking about?
So this is about Realities.
It's on the Steam Store.
Actually, it's on the Steam Store since the launch. It's for free.
That's right.
And it's an application that lets you travel to awesome places all around the world. So we start with this little globe in the beginning, and you can pick the scanned locations. They've been all reconstructed with photogrammetry.
Right.
And it's a very lifelike representation of the place. Like the cool thing is really to go out and explore all those little details.
Right.
Because they are not thrown in there by an artist, but they are like actually, you know,
they're pictures. It's a real picture that you can live within and walk around
it. It's a photo to walk around in. That's like the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this zooming, this bringing you somewhere really, really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Works really well to give the brain kind of a possibility to stay oriented, to update the spatial representation, to get this feeling like I'm traversing the space, I'm moving through the space, but it's too short to make you sick. So that's the funny
it's
thing.
Too quick.
About like 10 frames, 11 frames that we push you through that. So it's 100 milliseconds, 120 around that, and but it's enough to, you know, give this initial understanding. It's like a little cue that you need, which is enough. Some people find it a little jarring, especially when they like teleport in front of walls. We did some stuff to not let you teleport right in front of walls anymore and stuff.
Interesting. Okay, so you can put even bounds,
exactly.
Or something around the walls.
They find it jarring, which is not saying that there's motion sickness. Like I literally had one person getting motion sick after half an hour in there or so. And that was the only thing I ever recognized people getting sick.
Is this something you want people to start implementing rather than teleportation? Is this fast travel method? You do.
I think it's always there's no silver bullet at the moment.
Would you want to essentially open this up, or you want to see it in other apps?
It's simple to implement. I mean,
but you have some interesting gains, right? Like it's per distance. I remember you telling me you're tuning the speed and how long it takes you to get there.
The speed is actually variable.
Variable.
So it just makes sure that you never go longer than those 100 milliseconds. Because then you would start getting sick.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's the time.
It's time capped.
It's time capped, but the speed itself is variable.
Yeah.
Okay. So take those notes, guys, and start building your experience in that.
Yeah. The funny thing is that it's been coming up now. Like I think we've talked about it before. That Doom is implementing something.
Was it Doom?
Yes. Doom is like you slow down time while you point somewhere, and then you move there really quickly. And people apparently really liked it. Like there was a very positive article about it in some of the magazines, some of the blogs. So that was really funny because they like the headline of the article, like Doom solves locomotion problem. And then like we had this thing on Facebook where somebody actually linked us in the discussions, like saying, "Wow, we already said that before."
That's awesome. I'm glad someone pointed it out.
Yeah, I mean it's like, you know, we're in those early days of VR development where a lot of things get discovered by a lot of people.
Yeah,
so there's
yeah.
like it would be stupid to be, you know, like you did your design process and you arrived at the same conclusion. Well, yeah, that's the validation for me. Like, that's good.
Daniel, I'll just tell you, there's a lot of patents being filed currently.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no, seriously, like these ideas, even though we're talking about it openly on a podcast, I think the amount of like patents that I see a week and the stuff that gets patented, it's like even these small little utility patents like can just give you and your company like enough value and assets by having IP.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. Or you could put it, you know, make it open source and put it on GitHub and people can start implementing it. Or actually as an asset in the Steam store or the Unity asset store, I think would be really cool.
Yeah. Actually, I did put something else on GitHub that I worked on, which was the dolly shots for Coloss.
Coloss, I thought it. I guess I don't know if most people read it as Colossus or
Colossus.
Maybe,
yeah, nobody ever knows. Like I've heard native speakers saying different things, so I'm fine.
I'm sure most of the listeners here have seen it. Actually, it's the old. I guess it's a year old now.
Yeah, about that. It's the VR goal, VR Jam, Oculus Mobile VR Jam,
right.
Gold winner.
And
so
it's like
about this blue little Colossus that Colossus chasing this little hunter guy, and it turns out to not be chasing him. But I don't want to spoil it too much.
No.
So it's a fun little experience that I worked on with like an awesome team. Cho Chan from. Formerly Oculus, now at Within, brought us all together. Nick Pittam and I were doing a lot of programming with some awesome artists on that. It was a really fun project.
What did you learn from that? Or
yeah, I worked on a small part of it, actually, which was designing around the limitation that you can't have dolly shots in VR, especially, you know, gear with 60 hertz only and 360 kind of ish. Because you don't have the positional tracking.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt very limiting for the kind of story that we wanted to tell to not be able to, you know, move around in, because you can't do those fast cuts. People get, it's the same thing as with teleporting,
like,
but even worse because you don't actually initiate it, so you don't have agency about it.
Right.
But it's just like done to you and you're like, what
are you
happened?
Doing to me?
It's
like a little puppet, you know, someone's moving you around.
Plus, you know, it's just again making the world more believable if you traverse it a bit. So what we did there in the cave, there's this scene when your hunter goes up to the Coloss closer, where pretty much the environment fades out, the colors change, and you start slowly moving towards them. And that, funny enough, is not resulting in motion sickness. And the thinking behind it, the reasoning behind it, how we designed this was a big problem in making you motion sick is visual flow. And that's the bottom up thing. Like a lot of a lot of things in your visual field moving in the same direction. That is like the bottom up cause of making you motion sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like this top down component, which is only in your head, which can result, you know, from a basic input that comes up or may not, but it's depending on your interpretation.
So if you believe that you're moving,
exactly,
then you can cause motion sickness.
That causes motion sickness as well. So we did two things. We took away a lot of the environment that was not important for the scene at the moment.
Okay.
Like all the surrounding was not important. And only let the two main characters and like a few props in the scene to take away visual flow. And then we did something else, which was attaching a particle system. They were really short-lived particles, but they were attached to your torso.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be moving with you through space, giving you a reference frame. Also, there's a ground texture doing the same thing.
Interesting.
And that way you would be flipping the perception of the user, this top-down component of, it's not me who's moving through space, but those two characters are coming closer to me, like they are moving around me.
So you're grounding the player by putting something that they're standing on and also some particles that are around them.
Yeah.
And the world itself is moving towards them rather than them going through the world.
And it's a really cool, subtle effect, because most people didn't even notice that that the particles were, you know, attached to their body, to their torso, and like this ground texture was only in the peripheral vision, at the lower end. So a lot of people were not even aware of all those things happening. But it's enough to you know, flip their perception and get rid of motion sickness.
Right. That's really smart. And and that's design, right? It's like it's 90% of invisible, 99% invisible. And when you don't notice it is when it's working the best.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And a cool thing that I really liked about it as well was you get this feeling of focus. It was a very tense part of the story. And so everything that is not important falls away, and you focus on like the thing that's happening in front of you. So it's also kind of became a storytelling tool by accident. That if you use it wisely, is not, you know, making the experience worse. To just like, you know, oh, I have to deal with motion sickness, I have to like do this thing to deal. But you can use it to make it better and have that effect on top.
From a storytelling perspective, then the tool is to give people the tunnel vision of the action, right?
Which, funny enough, in this part, the little hunter had this tunnel vision because it's attracted by something that, like in the Colossus, like this big shiny diamond. And so you reflect that kind of tunnel vision in what's happening in the story.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, that's actually still based on brains as well. Like when you do have, there was an interesting... I mean, I always butcher studies and stories, but essentially when you get tunnel vision, when someone's pointing a gun to or towards you, literally, like, that's why a lot of victims don't remember the faces of their attackers, is because they have tunnel vision on the gun itself, on the threat. And so I literally perceptually everything else kind of fades away. And so you're just playing on top of that not forcing it, but essentially putting it on the player to experience it. And then they don't get motion sick.
Yeah.
Clever.
So there's a lot of things, and I think you know, thinking about those basic mechanisms that are at work can give you great guidance for designing VR experiences, and also you know, go beyond what the best practice guide tells you. Like I would advise everybody that starts developing VR to, you know, follow the practice guide, like do simple things. It feels very constraining in the beginning. It's a good place to start, and then, you know, go from there, learn about those mechanics at work, experiment a lot, and but they can guide you to bit by bit find ways to design around those limitations and do something more, something that is, you know, a little bit more challenging.
And so the best practice is a good base to begin with, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't experiment with the core even principles.
Yeah, don't think from the beginning on you're like way too smart for this, and you know how to solve all that, because that's what I've been seeing in a lot of you know, first time experiences that people made, that they're like, yeah, I read the thing, and like, yeah, this felt way too boring, and so I just implemented this crazy train ride with, like, you know, you'd be thrown around in the end, and like a lot of cutscenes where your characters animated. So there's a lot of weird stuff happening.
Yeah, I even just saw a new freaking roller coaster app being published at Oculus Store. I was like, how in 2016 is someone still making a roller coaster app? And how did it get approved, first of all, by Oculus?
Yeah, so it's funny. I mean, like, some people demand that kind of stuff. We had that as well with realities. We had actually a lot of people, a lot of people, but they had evocative people,
right,
I guess,
right,
demanding those things, like writing in the Steam forums, like, hey, can we get like a continuous motion with the gamepad? I want to freely explore the places.
Really?
And so we ended up implementing that.
So how does that work? Is that the sentence beat behind your head that you're saying? Or is it just the trackpad?
No, if you use it with the Oculus, you can use the gamepad, and there's like a comfort mode, which is basically just casting the ray, like the teleportation ray.
Uh-huh.
You can also use the joysticks to move around. I couldn't get myself to fully implement continuous motion, because like I implemented it and it made me sick within like 20 seconds. Sorry guys, I can't do this. I'm too afraid that I'm gonna some people sick that accidentally do that. So what I ended up doing is making really, really small jumps. It's really, really small jumps. They are continuous, like you can keep doing them. But that, at least for me, I haven't done like a whole lot of user testing. Just a few folks made the problem way less severe.
What do you think about? Have you tried Minecraft yet? I know they've had it on Gear VR for a while, and they just released on Rift. They have some fascinating sickness kind of solutions, and they have like a whole sub menu. They can turn on and off these features, and the amount of things that they've implemented, I think, are just fascinating. So, one is that I think lateral kind of turning with a thumbstick is always impossible. It pretty much causes the most sickness. That and kind of lateral movement, like strafing left and right, really hard to do, or it'll just make you sick. And even rotating left, like they essentially made it notch rotation, I think. Like
same we implemented.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's like 15 degrees, I think, is what one, each rotation is. Second, they actually had the jump. So in Minecraft, you can obviously jump. But that's also a very big cause of motion sickness. So they had it so that you see yourself going up, but then you teleport down, as in when you jump. It doesn't make sense as much on paper. Even when you're actually trying it, it's not like it doesn't break the immersion, but like it's a way so that you don't feel motion sick. Yeah. And even I'm very immune to motion sickness. Like I could see why that would happen. I think you can turn it on and off. They have a couple of more tricks in there as well. Like, you know, this is Carmack's baby essentially. This is what he's been doing. So what do you think? Is teleportation completely like the way to go at this point? Or because I still really, really, really want a continuous motion thing in virtual reality. I'm still looking for experiments and things that people are doing so that I do still feel that I can traverse within this environment. And it still feels big to me, because rather than being able to teleport places, like it literally breaks the sense of the hugeness of the place.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you want to experiment? Like if you had like next 6 months to play with Locomotion, right? You're fully paid. This lab will get you doing it, and you'll have a team of engineers to help you build it.
That's tough. Because I think there's some basic human limitations at work that we have to figure out how to get around. Again, like this, what you just said, it's again those free aspects that you have. Like it's practicability, it's the comfort, and it's the immersion that you want to get from this motion, and you can't have all. Like that's how it feels.
Pick
like
two.
it's this pick two kind of thing. So I think, you know, we might come up with something down the road, but compared to the things that we have now, the solutions that we have now, which are all fairly simple solutions, that will be, if we find something, I have the hunch that it's going to be very, very sophisticated in a way that it, you know, exploits even deeper things, like, you know, maybe like flickering through that motion and then to get around your threshold. Like I'm just like making random things up, but
what if you're flickering as you're moving forward, so like you literally drop every other frame is black as you're moving forward? I don't know.
Maybe it's something like that. It's also, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can do with a peripheral vision, like having this kind of tunnel thing.
Right.
But again, there's a few implementations of that, like doing a vignette around your viewport. Lucid Trips, for example, is doing that when you jump. Like they just fade that thing in. And also there was this paper that was totally hyped up. People like implementing exactly that. It's like, wow, guys. Don't act like this is this crazy surprise.
Yeah.
Like it's blocking peripheral motion to reduce.
It made so much
flow.
News.
So much
news.
Yeah,
and Eagle Flight 2 from Ubisoft.
Yeah.
I can't wait to play that game. And I'm honestly so surprised that people aren't making more flying games. Like maybe that's okay, DK1 and DK2 days, but I still want to fly. I think most people still want to scare the shit out of themselves and like fly around or fall. Like. I don't know. We're all way too worried about motions like this.
Yeah, that's another thing. I think that should not be, you know, be scared of experimenting more. Because that's, I think, how we might. That's the only way how we might stumble upon something. Like, there's no obvious solution.
Yeah, not at all.
But there's just some things that work surprisingly well. Like I've showed you the game jam thing that we built for flying through an asteroid field, right? Gives you the little the Vive controllers are your thrusters, and you can accelerate, and then you like fry, but you have the inertia, so you have to catch yourself again, and you start rotating and spinning, and we narrowed it down to a set of parameters that surprisingly don't make you sick, because also that is one of the things we would think like, wow, it's going to make people super sick. Like, you have acceleration all the time,
right.
Deceleration all the time. You even have rotation.
Right.
But it kind of works because I think the environment is featureless enough.
Yeah.
And so you, for example, don't get a lot of visual flow, optical flow, and so no near field 3D stuff most of the time. So you can get away with it. And just, you know, doing that kind of experiments and learning what are the parameters that actually contribute, while keeping in mind the factors that you have to watch out for and think about. I think that is probably like the best idea to learn more about the phenomenon and down the road find solutions. But as I said before, there's no silver bullet at the moment. Like, at the moment, like, the best locomotion methods are the ones that make sense in the game. Which is like budget cuts, the example that is always used. Like, they made something that just works really well in their game. So they have teleporting basically, but they make it believable and they make it not feel like a constraint.
Yeah, very much a part of the universe and the feature of the game itself.
Yeah, exactly. And also with, like, for example, a drift, which is this locomotion where you would think, wow, this is gonna make me super motion sick.
Yeah.
It kind of fits into the whole thing, and you know, feeling a little dizzy for me, like, makes it even more immersive.
It's
because it's
you're an astronaut.
Yeah, it fits into the thing. So it's I mean, I know, like, for example,
like,
my co-founder David,
idea,
yeah. I can't play it, but
really?
Yeah, but there's, yeah, I think it's, you have to tie it to, so it has to make sense in what you're building.
I completely agree. Giving the world or even things and features of the experience that you're making, giving them a reason for them to exist, I think, is super, super crucial. And it comes down to even audio. Like, the music that you're hearing shouldn't be like a voiceover coming straight from your head so they can hear the sound. Give it a reason for it to exist. Why is there music playing? Is it coming from a radio? Is it coming from beyond the mountains?
Yeah, yeah, there was an excellent talk last Oculus Connect from one of the audio engineers from Oculus. Really worth watching for, like, getting an intro into that. And that was, like, the same thing. Like, he said, like, don't have, like, you know, voice of God kind of shit.
Right.
It's just weird and it's just freaking you out. That was just, it's awkward. So I think one of the really good basic ideas for designing for VR with sound and with every other thing is respecting the physicality of things. So if, you know, don't make stuff appear out of nowhere with no reason. Like, you can make a hologram appear out of your, like, hologram projector on your arm, like, that's fine, or, you know,
sure,
if that makes sense. But don't make solid art. If you want to have something that feels solid and you let it appear out of nowhere, that's bullshit.
That's,
like,
not,
I was
a real thing. Yeah,
we had the same thing when working on the Audi VR experience. So as the lead UX designer for the Audi VR showroom experience, And there it was a lot about, you know, how do you get around the car because you don't have enough space. And a lot of people was like, yeah, you know, just make it spinnable, like, let people just turn it around. And I was always like, ah, we can't do that because, like, it's a big car, you know, it's like,
right.
It should feel heavy. It should feel like, Audi always loves to use the word premium. Everything. Like, if you ever want to convince somebody at Audi to do something, tell them it's premium.
It's a premium experience.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. And so I wanted to really respect the physicality of that car and the inertia that it has, that you can't just spin it around.
Interesting. That's actually what probably would have solved your the months of experimenting that you did to try to get around this small space constrained room. It was just to spin it around, but I guess that would break the sense of it being real and whatnot. I guess, I mean, off the top of my head, I would say maybe make the car sort of, like, shrink down to a small size thing, spin it, and then open it. I don't know.
Or, yeah, but again, then you violate the physical appearance of the car. Like,
yeah,
that the car is the center of that whole experience, and it should be as real and as you know, have that mass, and the believableness, if that is a word.
No, I think, and weight, I think, is still a very real property that you can get in VR, which we haven't had before. Like, you can't get weight of an object looking at it through an iPhone or a MacBook. Like, weight and even texture almost at this point.
I had a fascinating moment with that. It was like early DK2 days And it's playing this weird demo. Like, I've never heard anything. Like, it was supposed to become a game, but never did, I think.
What's it called?
Like, Red Room or something.
Okay.
I don't even know anymore. The thing was, it was just this random room, which was looking really nice. They had, like, some trick to have very little aliasing.
Okay.
Like, that was the only thing other I remember. Uh-huh. But I was standing in the doorframe, and I stood up. And I had this magical moment where I would, like, feel that door frame over me, like the weight of like the wall, and just respect that. And I mean, now with the Vive, that is like pretty much standard.
Right,
like you have
right.
that all the time. That's
right.
something we got very used to. But that was the first time for me that I accepted those virtual things to have this weight and
right.
presence. And
was that your first time? You're like almost getting to that present moment.
Yeah. I mean,
cool.
like that's like those early DK2 times where everybody's like, I had like two seconds of presence.
I remember the forums actually back then. It was like, yeah, I felt it for a minute. No way, man.
What did you play? Yeah, it's super funny.
Quick question to
yeah,
wrap things
sure.
up. Have you ever like fallen asleep in VR and woken up with the headset on you?
No, never.
I've heard some cool stories about people in like Elite Dangerous just nodding off in their bed or in their chairs and then waking up and just like, whoa, I'm in this world. Damn. I would love to see something built around like losing consciousness and regaining consciousness and still being in a virtual world. And if what kind of an impact that would have.
I should try that out. Like, I like to take these, you know, 20-minute naps where you kind of zone out. You don't really fall asleep, but then you go into this weird dreamland in between and then come back. It's almost like a meditation
wave.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I should try that sometime in VR and see what happens.
Quick shout out to Realities. You guys should totally check it out. There's some wonderful actually experiences in there.
And there's some new stuff coming up. If you've checked it out and didn't look into it for a while, we'll be updating soon. So there's some new scans
That's
coming
right.
out. Just check the Steam announcements. Whenever we put something in there, we'll write it there. And also Twitter, Realities_IO.
That's right. And another shout out actually to Daniel's talk at the Unity Summit. Was it? Vision Summit. And he had a great talk about the Audi VR showroom experience and how they figured out how to kind of move themselves around the room. So
yeah,
great.
Check it out.
Thank you, Daniel, for joining us for another episode of Research.
It was a pleasure, man.
Oh, yeah.
Keep doing your podcast.
Thank you.
It's really helpful.
Absolutely. Join us for next episode, guys. Bye.